You may proceed, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Kristi Stanislawski. I'm here today on behalf of the city of Cold Spring and the 2010 Chevy Silverado Crew Cab. We're here today, we believe that the trial court incorrectly found that Princeton Auto was the owner of the vehicle under the forfeiture statute, which is Minnesota Statute 169A.63. In reaching its conclusion that Princeton Auto was the owner of the vehicle, it appears that the trial court relied on the following facts. And in her memorandum, she specifically states these are the facts that led to her conclusion.
I got to ask you this question because this is part of the reason I was so excited about my pen. I was absolutely stumped in prepping for this hearing when it occurred to us as panel judges that an individual under Statute 168.101, an individual under the age of 18, which was, Connor in this case, can't own an automobile. So despite the factors that Judge Hennessy relied on, how do you get beyond the fact that he cannot legally even own an automobile?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's a couple of different ways we can. First and foremost, the court needs to, or the trial court determined that it was Princeton Auto Center, this car dealership that owned this vehicle. And the only reason they concluded that, or not the only reason, but that John Davis, who was the owner of that dealership, is because he had the vehicle in his possession and gave it to his grandson.
Well, but that's the problem. And we understand the litany of what happened, but the argument hinges on, of course, first, who the owner is, and then we look at the secondary consideration. But how can Connor be the owner? He can't legally.
Well, legally.
So who do you say is the owner, then, if Connor isn't?
Well, if Connor can't, then, Your Honor, I would say it would be John Davis personally and not the dealership.
But the title remained with the dealership.
Well, and
What facts show that someone else owned the vehicle?
Well, because John Davis individually took out a personal policy for this vehicle. There's no evidence in the record that there was any insurance policy that Princeton Auto Center had owned or had any insurance on this vehicle.
But do you agree there's a rebuttable presumption here that Princeton Auto is the owner? Correct?
I do, Your Honor.
And is there any evidence in the record to show that Princeton Auto actually transferred title of this vehicle to someone else?
No, there's not.
And isn't title indicative of ownership?
Well, to some extent, but I also think that when the legislature added to the definition of owner to be somebody that is legally entitled to possession, use, and control, it also is not only who might be the registered owner, but in fact, someone who's actually using it on a regular basis, exclusively.
Well, it says legally entitled. The definition of owner says legally entitled to possession, use, and control of a motor vehicle. So it doesn't say who's actually using it or possessing it or controlling it. It's who's legally entitled to that. And in order for a corporation to give a vehicle to someone else, the corporation needs to take action, correct?
Correct.
And is there any evidence that the corporation took action, authorized the gift to John or some other member of the Davis family?
Well, the only evidence I would suggest is that John Davis appeared at the hearing as the representative, as the owner of Princeton Auto. And so his testimony and what he set forth throughout his testimony and throughout the hearing is the evidence. He testified that, yes, the title should have been transferred out of Princeton Auto's name. He testified that he exclusively was giving it to his grandson to use.
He didn't actually effectuate that gift, did he?
He didn't, other than to state he should have. He should have transferred it out because there's no evidence in the record that this vehicle was ever going back to Princeton Auto. There's no evidence in the record that at some point John Davis intended to take it back from his grandson and put it on his lot to sell. The evidence.
But isn't it your obligation to rebut the presumption? And you didn't present any, the Cold Spring didn't present any evidence that the dealership transferred or the dealership, someone who's authorized at the dealership took action to transfer this vehicle to another individual.
Well, you're right. We don't have any evidence that that actually took place or that we set forth, other than what the facts are here of that John Davis did state he intended to, or he should have transferred the title. He took out a personal policy for him, his wife, Chad Davis, who's Connor Davis's father, and Connor Davis.
When you take out an auto insurance policy, they don't require that you bring down the certificate of title to show that you're the owner, the registered owner.
I would agree with that, Your Honor, but I think it is, I believe it is intention of his, outward manifestation that this vehicle did not belong to Princeton Auto. If they were just using it for a weekend, if it was prom or if it was something like that where he just grabbed something off of the lot and said, okay, I'm going to let my grandson use it for, you know, a week or whatever it might be.
I keep going back to the fact that the testimony was that he gave it to his grandson, but legally he couldn't.
Right.
So kind of right back to that.
Right. I would also add on that, in addition, we're saying, first and foremost, and at the hearing, it was my intention that this was Craig Davis's vehicle. When Craig Davis is stopped that particular day when he's arrested, he's telling the officer at that point, this is his vehicle. He's looking for the insurance at that point. It was only until the next day when he's in jail and when he's had time to consult with his attorney that now he's saying he should have put it in his nephew's name at that point.
But here, our standard of review is clear error as to the factual findings, correct?
Correct.
And we defer to the district court's credibility determinations.
Correct.
And it appears to me from the district court's order, while not expressed, that she didn't find Craig credible in that regard when he, or his statements that it was his vehicle, she didn't find to be credible.
Correct. Correct. And that's where, you know, I understand this court's situation or standard of review in that sense. And I mean, very little of my argument here today is going to be pushing that it was Craig Davis's vehicle. However, I think when it came time for the hearing, I think facts came out that were not originally stated in terms of that now this vehicle belonged to Connor Davis when that was never set forth originally. But again, what I would argue is that although Connor Davis cannot be the owner of this vehicle, John Davis personally can be. And the fact that he had no intention, or at least the record doesn't show, that he was going to put this car back on the lot at Princeton Auto, he pulled out a personal policy for it, and that he was allowing his grandson to use it exclusively, leads to our argument that the owner of this vehicle is not Princeton Auto, and it would be Connor Davis through his grandfather, John Davis. In the alternative, if the court is going to find that Princeton Auto Center is the owner of the vehicle, then I would submit the trial court erred in determining that they were the innocent owner of the forfeited vehicle. As the court's aware, Statute 169A.63, Subdivision 7D, states that the innocent owner can prove that they were an innocent owner if they demonstrate by clear and convincing evidence that they did not have actual or constructive knowledge that the vehicle would be used or operated in a manner contrary to law. Additionally to that, they go on to state that if the offender is a family or household member or any of the owners who petition the court has three or more prior impaired driving convictions, the petitioning owner is presumed to know of any vehicle used by the offender that's contrary to law. As the record states, Craig Davis, who operated the motor vehicle that day, had four prior driving convictions or impaired driving convictions prior to his arrest in September 2017. So that means as father, brother, nephew, John Davis, Chad Davis, Connor Davis, all had constructive knowledge at the time Craig Davis drove the vehicle.
But Craig Davis only asked Connor, where in the record do you demonstrate that that the request to let me use the truck was either implicitly conveyed. How did they know he was driving it?
Well, for one of the things is that all of these people live together. John Davis lives with his two adult sons, Craig Davis and
Chad. That's a stretch to say, gee, you live in the same house. We don't even know if Connor's dad was even in the house, home, in the area at the time that Craig used the truck. I mean, there seems to be a big gap, and you can't just say that they live together makes it look funny, but we need some evidence that they were aware of this.
Well, John Davis, again, as the owner of Princeton Auto, was the representative at the hearing. And he was at the home that day. He testified that he was out on the lake, but he was at the home that day. And again, the statute
but
is clear.
All right, just to be clear, you're not arguing that John Davis is presumed to know that he was driving the vehicle and that he had these prior convictions as the owner of the corporation versus as a family member. I mean, we need to distinguish his roles here, correct?
Well, we can distinguish them to some extent. As father of Craig Davis, he's presumed to know. He's presumed to know that any time Craig Davis drives that vehicle, it's going to be contrary to law.
Correct. But you were previously arguing, assuming we find that the judge correctly, or assuming that we find that the evidence supports the judge's determination that Princeton Auto is the owner, you're now arguing the second part. So it relates to Princeton Auto, not John Davis as an individual, correct?
Well, correct, but I'm not sure that when John Davis is testifying as his father and where he was and that the vehicle was at the home, if we can really distinguish, if he can separate himself at that point.
But the innocent owner statute only goes to the petitioner, and the petitioner is not John. The petitioner is the auto company.
Well, if John's the only one that's showing up to the hearing to represent Princeton Auto Center, Princeton Auto Center has the burden at that point. Princeton Auto Center has the burden to show by clear and convincing evidence. And so if John is the only person from Princeton Auto Center to show up at the hearing to represent, then he has to be able, we have to be able to discuss his ability as the father in addition to, because how do you separate his knowledge only of the corporation compared to his knowledge as father?
Well, do you have some authority, counsel, that if Princeton Auto is the owner of this vehicle, a corporation can't be a family or household member? So is there some authority that suggests that we can look beyond the closely held corporation to owners of that corporation in applying the innocent owner defense?
Well, I'm not aware of any authority other than to state again that he is the one who's representing Princeton Auto Center. He's the one that appeared, and he's the one that said, as owner, I'm here on behalf of Princeton Auto.
Didn't he state at the hearing that he was on the dock when Craig asked Connor to use the truck?
Yes.
So how did he have actual or constructive knowledge that the vehicle would be used in a manner contrary to law?
Because I believe what the statute states in the second sentence, that the knowledge he's got is constructive. He starts with constructive knowledge because Craig Davis has more than three DWI convictions.
But I don't think, how can you equate that he has constructive knowledge when we're talking about the corporation and not a family member or household member here? It's because a corporation says if the offender is a family member or household member of any of the owners who petition, and the petitioner was the corporation, and the petitioner doesn't have family members or household members.
And again, Your Honor, to that, what I would say is that John Davis is the one who appeared at the hearing on behalf of Princeton Auto. I'm not sure how we're able to separate his knowledge out between that of just what it is for Princeton Auto, and that as he is a father. And because I believe he has constructive knowledge, we have to start there. And so just the fact that he's on the dock doesn't mean that that knowledge still isn't present. Thank you.
Thank you, Council. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you wish. Council for respondent.
Good morning. My name is Craig Cascarano. I represent the respondent in this matter. Council, I don't have a great deal to say, especially in lieu of the court's questions. I think one of the things I'd like to say is in my 43 years of experience as a criminal lawyer, it's the first time I've actually sat on a respondent desk in the Court of Appeals. It doesn't look that much different, but it's certainly different for sure.
Well, Council, why would John Davis take out a personal insurance policy for a vehicle that's owned by Princeton Auto? And that certainly isn't consistent with corporate business practices.
It is. I don't know the answer to that question. He didn't testify to that. I think the facts are fairly uncontroverted. Princeton Auto had the title. John intended at some time, I think, when Connor turned 17, to gift the car to him. He had the opportunity, or Connor was going to use and indeed use the car during the summer. Obviously, he wanted to make sure his grandson was insured. I don't know what his motives were, but when I read the appellant's brief, I think the thing that stuck out to me most, especially after I read the Hart case, I cited in my memorandum to the court the Kubis case. The only reason I did that is I think that's a good outline of what the case law provides and how the court should analyze an innocent owner and whether there's a rebuttable presumption about actual constructive knowledge given the fact that a household member has three or more DWIs. I cited that to the court, and in fact, I went through a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 analysis of how the court should conclude that Princeton Auto and John Davis are innocent owners. Anyways, the thing that shot out to me most was the appellant keeps on saying that Connor had legally entitled to use, possession, and control of the car. I think where that argument is missing on them is the key word there is legally. I don't dispute the fact that Connor had use, possession, and control of the car. The facts are the facts. But he was not legally entitled. And that word legally is also emphasized in the Hart case. And I understand the Hart case is an unpublished case, but the Hart case, for all intents and purposes, is literally on all fours here. Kelly Hart, in that case, had unfettered use of the car, is the word this court used, actually. But Daryl Hart is the person who purchased it, who put the title in his name, did the insurance policy.
It's distinguishable in terms of the insurance because here the title remains with the dealership, and in that case it was the individual, the father, that took the insurance out.
I agree with that, Your Honor, but again, I think the facts looked at in totality really scream out that Princeton Auto Center is indeed the owner. And the next question is, based upon the presumption of the statute under 169A63, whether the presumption of actual constructive knowledge of the owner was met. It is a presumption, I agree, but it's a rebuttable presumption, which again is outlined in the Kubis case. And the case law, the testimony was crystal clear that John Davis, I think he's the sole owner of the Subchapter S Corporation, but in any event, he was out on the dock fishing, and the corporation on his behalf simply did not know that Craig Davis had asked Connor to use the car. I respectfully suggest that the trial court, is the best person and in the best position to judge credibility, and in fact, the court made reference that she credited the testimony of Craig Davis, Connor Davis, and more importantly, John Davis with regard to that. And I think
well,
that's...
she credited the testimony of Craig Davis, who claimed to be the owner of the vehicle. Why? It seems to me that if she believed him that I own this vehicle, that seems to me, why does that not rebut the presumption? And basically, we don't even get to the innocent owner defense at that point because he's the driver.
I think it's very clear in the court's order that she credited John Davis with regard to the question as to who the owner of the car was, number one, with regard to the corporation, where the title was, and those kinds of things, and also credited the testimony of John Davis specifically that he was out on the dock fishing at the time. I think this court would have to make a huge leap of faith to determine that Craig Davis is, in fact, the actual owner of the car, and therefore the rebuttable presumption under actual constructive knowledge is not met. I just don't think that's a rational result of what this is all about. The case law is real clear. I think the trial court made a factual determination and outlined all the steps that the trial courts should go through. There basically are simply two questions. Who's the owner? And whether or not, when someone in the household has three or more DWIs, whether the presumption that there's actual or constructive knowledge has been met. And the court went through that very specifically with regard to the testimony and said, yes, very clear that Princeton Auto Center is the owner, even though Connor had use and possession of the car, because again, I think the operative word is legally entitled. And then secondly, that she credited the testimony of John that he says, I'm on the dock. He must have a huge house because he's got all these kids, all his kids live with him. But he didn't have a clue that Connor had given the keys to Craig. And based upon that factual determination, she concluded that the state or the county could not proceed with forfeiture. I have nothing further unless the courts
counsel,
have any questions.
Appellant argues that John is presumed to know of the prior driving violations and therefore has should be charged with constructive knowledge that the vehicle would be used or operated in a manner contrary to law. Do you have a response to that argument?
I think, frankly, to be honest, when I was doing the memorandum to the court and preparing my brief, I really never came to at least in my mind, the answer as to a corporation who had the title, in this case was Subchapter S Corporation, and then John Davis, who's the individual father. I concluded, however, that since John Davis as an individual testified that the rebuttable presumption, and the presumption of when you have three or more household members, blah, 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 that there's a rebuttable presumption, and since he is the father, that I decided to put him on the witness stand, despite the fact that the title was actually in Princeton Auto Center. Obviously, a corporation can't, you know, it's an entity. It can't move and do it by itself. John has to do it by himself. So whether or not there is a presumption that John Davis, as a family member, household member, indeed would have either actual constructive. But the Cubis case, and of course the Hart case, and then the Riff case, which is a whole different ballgame because it's a drug case, talks about on the 3DWI where there is a presumption, of course it's a rebuttable presumption. And that's why we put John Davis on the witness stand, the other folks, and the court concluded that we had rebutted the presumption that he had actual or constructive knowledge because he was simply out on the deck, out on the dock fishing. And the one other thing I'd like to say to the court is there isn't one scintilla of evidence on the record that disputes that factual determination. And the trial court obviously felt that dispositive and therefore denied the forfeiture. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
Thank you. I just want to follow up with that. I want to bring the court's attention, because we heard a lot from the respondent's attorney about the rebuttable presumption when the offender, the constructive knowledge the offender, the petitioning owner may have when the family member has at least three prior DWI convictions. The language in 169A.637D is not a rebuttable presumption. The language here clearly states if the offender is a family or household member of the owners who petition the court and has three or more prior impaired driving convictions, the petitioning owner is presumed to know of any vehicle used by the offender that's contrary to law. And I think that's very important, because I think what the legislature is doing here is they're not treating someone with one prior DWI conviction the same as somebody with three prior DWI convictions. They're making sure that there's a presumed knowledge, a constructive knowledge on the part of these folks that are allowing these vehicles to be taken out.
But can it still be rebutted, counsel? I mean, otherwise, what's the purpose of having a hearing? I mean, if it's an automatic forfeiture, if you're raising an if you're a family or household member and you raise an innocent owner defense, and you know the conviction and the priors are undisputed, there'd be no basis for a hearing.
Well, Your Honor, I think that there still could be. The law states for the innocent owner, there's another prong where you've taken steps to prohibit the individual from driving the vehicle. There's none of that. There's no testimony from John Davis that he did anything to tell the family not to allow Craig Davis to use the vehicle, to prohibit Craig Davis from using
Craig
any
Davis
vehicle.
Otherwise could drive the vehicle. It just happened on that day he decided to drink and drive.
And that's where, Your Honor, I would argue that the legislature is saying, if John Davis is allowing him to use a vehicle, he's going to have constructive knowledge that he's going to drive it contrary to law because he's got at least three prior DWI convictions.
But how is John Davis allowing him to use the vehicle if John Davis didn't know he was using the vehicle?
Well, Your Honor, I would point to the Pruden case, in which they talk a little bit more about that the standard is, the higher proof is on the owner's lack of knowledge to avoid forfeiture, rather than putting the high proof on their knowledge, the owner's knowledge, that they would drive it contrary to law. And so I think it goes more to that point of, are we really saying that you can just be in another room in the same house and close your eyes or be in the bathroom, and so you're not going to have any knowledge? At what point in time will the language in 169A63, when will that actually be used?
But what evidence is there in this record that John had reason to believe that Craig, as opposed to Connor, would be using this truck? Because John's testimony was that his intent was for this truck to be used by Connor.
And what I would say to that, Your Honor, is first and foremost, he's got constructive knowledge because the statute says it's presumed that if he will drive it, it will be contrary to law.
But there isn't constructive knowledge that he will drive it.
Well, then I would say, Your Honor, on that second prong with the innocent owner, he's not taking any steps to prohibit any other family members or anybody else in the household from allowing Craig Davis to use that vehicle either.
If they all live in the same house and people drive cars, what is it you're saying he should have done?
Your Honor, I believe because he's got at least three, four at that point, DWIs, I think the legislature is saying, hey, look, you owners, you have now a duty in some respect. And so whether it's he's stating that, hey, family members, no, Craig Davis is not allowed to drive any of these vehicles, or family members, if Craig Davis is going to use a vehicle, someone needs to go with, or something along those lines. He needs to take some proactive steps to ensure he's not going to be driving any vehicle on that particular vehicle. Otherwise, what's to stop John Davis, who's got a load of vehicles at his disposal, from bringing home vehicles, allowing Craig Davis to use them contrary to law, and avoiding forfeiture at every step? I think the legislature purposely has put this in to put some sort of responsibility on the folks that are allowing these vehicles to be used, especially when they're at least three or more DWI convictions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The matter will be taken under advisement today, and we'll have a decision for you within 90 days. Thank you.
Thank you.